Welcome to the Under the Capes podcast, your geek business guide. We're going under the capes of bloggers, cosplayers, artists, and other entrepreneurs to show you how they have built a following around what they love. I'm your host, Tim Ludi, and today we're going under the cape of the geeks worldwide. How's it going, everyone? Hope you had a great weekend, as always. I made some great progress on my Cable cosplay for San Diego Comic-Con this weekend. The metal arm is done, working on the gun a little bit. Still a long way to go, but definitely in the con crunch now, so happy to get some work in. This week, I'm talking to Casey Walsh from The Geeks Worldwide, which is a blog and podcast network with over 50 contributors adding news, editorials, and podcasts to the site. Included in their network is the Capes Crew podcast, the Comics Noobs show, and Press Any Key. And Casey originally started off as the editor of the comics section and the co-host of the Capes Crew podcast. And he eventually moved into the role of editor-in-chief of the entire GWW. And this is a really cool interview because, especially for writers who aren't necessarily interested in starting their own site, but more looking to be contributors to some of the big names, you know, like your IGNs or your Hollywood Reporters or, you know, up and up the ladder. Starting your own site may not be the best route to that, but joining a site like the GWW may be a great way to kind of grow your writing skills and get in front of an audience. So we talk about how a writer can kind of build up a reputation on other sites to help them become a contributor to some of the larger sites if your goal is to just be a writer. If you've already started your own geek brand or you're kind of more into building your own, you know, entire brand around, you know, whether it's YouTube or a Twitch stream or whatever it is, I think you'll still get a lot of great info out of this one because we kind of talk about the media industry as a whole. We talk about their experience in renaming the GWW and a lot of other really cool stuff. So let's dive right into the interview with Casey Walsh from Geeks Worldwide. I am now joined with Casey from the Geeks Worldwide. Casey, thanks for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.
So yeah, can you tell us a little bit about kind of your introduction into the nerd community and, you know, how that led to Geeks Worldwide?
I mean, my introduction, I guess, was began at a Costco a long time ago in a land far, far away. My parents were are notoriously frugal people, I guess we'll call them. It was always hard for me to buy comic books, even back then when they were only $1.99 or whatever, because that was one book for 99 cents was expensive, or whatever, a 20-page book or whatever.
Yeah, but it can get up there.
Yeah. But when the Death of Superman came out, Costco was running like this weird package deal. Like they were just lumping like 50 comic books in a pack or whatever for like $20 or something crazy. So that was actually those were actually the first comic books I got. And so it was like Death of Superman and then a bunch of weird like JLA and like Green Lantern titles that nobody wanted. So that was kind of my first toe dip. And then it was like the Batman and the animated series. Me and my dad, I know a lot of people don't remember, but that used to be like a Friday night primetime show. So it was like a tradition in our house to kind of, eat dinner real fast on Friday nights and sit down at 7 o'clock and watch, Batman, the animated series.
Yeah, that was definitely my introduction to Batman and, a lot of other people's like quintessential Batman.
Yeah. And then of course of all the X-Men cartoons and Spider-Man cartoons those were made in my heyday. So that was a huge influence, but I mean, I've always had a deep love for the original medium of comic books and And that still continues today, much to my wallet and wife's chagrin.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually, I got started the same way now that you say it. I got it was a 10 comic book pack for like a dollar, and just whatever happened to be in there was the comics I ended up following for like the first few years.
Yeah, now the kids get digital Humble Bundles and that stuff, so I don't think these comic book chip packs exist anymore, at least in hardcover form, but in digital form they're abound. Every week you can find these kind of weird Humble Bundle things, and they're a perfect way to kind of jump into a comic book or something you haven't tried before.
So yeah, you started kind of just as a comic lover. How did that evolve into writing about comics?
I always had like a knack for writing. It was something I was just kind of like naturally good at. In fact, I got a award in college at a national communications conference for writing a, this doesn't sound crazy, I forget what it was, a paper on satanic music and feminism. Don't ask me to try to explain it. It's always a funny story to you, because I do really good, especially with writing, like under pressure. So I think that night I had to write like 25 pages in like a night, and I did it, like just got a bottle of wine and just sat for 8 hours and wrote 25 pages, and I won an award for it. That was the kind of like moment where I realized, oh, I could actually like do this for like fun. I like doing this. And I'd always kind of naturally been a okay writer. I don't know how good of a writer you are when you're 10 or whatever, but I was always writing stories and doing weird stuff, kind of creating weird mythos. And, you know, every kid had a video camera. Like we would make movies and stuff in my backyard, and it was always like, how can we make fake special effects? How can we use fireworks? So it was always like writing, creating stories was always kind of my thing.
A natural storyteller.
Yeah, and then as I got older, it kind of, as college and making money becomes more important, and then the fact that like the internet is now booming and it's super hard to make money writing. I'm just going to tell that right now. If you are thinking about becoming a writer, a professional writer, and you think that you're going to make any money out of it, just stop right now, because you're not going to make any money doing it, especially as the years go on and on. So, I mean...
Yeah, if you're looking to write about the fun stuff like comics and video games and stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Just do it for free, and if you're lucky, then someone will pay you advertising dollars or something. But I think the days of, like, becoming, like, a staff writer or that being, like, a legitimate or viable job for somebody is gone. And now writers are just celebrities that people just kind of gravitate towards, too. So back to kind of my getting going writing for like a, I guess, pseudo career path or volunteer path or doing it for fun or whatever. I love podcasts. I listen to every podcast I can. We started the GWW podcast network just for that reason, just because I just love the idea of a podcast and that anyone can kind of be a radio star. I worked in radio, all through college. I worked at a local rock station that's now defunct, but back then it was like the cool place to be, and it was such a like fantasy environment, and it was everything you ever kind of heard like in movies and then TV. It's just like this wild, crazy place that like the rules seem to not apply, and there are just a bunch of weird, crazy people working there all the time. So I kind of just love that. I love the medium of being able to just say whatever I want and people having to listen to it, being forced to.
Yeah,
so I think that's what podcasting became, and so I really kind of gravitated towards that. And then I found a podcast that I liked where they talked about, they were video game based, and it was called Geeks with Wives. And that was what Geeks Worldwide was originally called. We were originally called Geeks with Wives. So I listened to this podcast, and they had mentioned, hey, I'd reached out to them on Twitter. I was like, hey, I dig the podcast. Like, I'm into, you guys never talk about, you'd say you're Geeks Worldwide or whatever, or, I'm sorry, Geeks with Wives, but you're always talking about, exclusively video games. Like, what if somebody wants to talk about comics or whatever? And they're like, just come on and start writing about it. So that literally happened. I mean, the next day I had written stuff about Guardians of the Galaxy. Then this was before the movie came out, because that's my like favorite thing in the world. Guardians of the Galaxy is my favorite comic and something I just love. So I just wrote a piece about how much I love the Guardians of the Galaxy, and it kind of just snowballed from there.
Nice. So, yeah, you were kind of knew more about Guardians of the Galaxy before, so you've got to be ecstatic now.
I'm not. Really? I know, you know why? And I'm selfish, and this is me being a dick. But Guardians of the Galaxy was always like my thing, and it was like kind of something that like, you know, like you have that one thing that like nobody knows about, and kind of like your little dirty little secret. I mean, that was my thing, and I could always find Guardians of the Galaxy comics fairly easily, or even like discounted. And heaven forbid there was a toy line or something, I could definitely get that, no problem. But now, I mean, geez, everybody knows what Guardians of the Galaxy is, and it's nice to see its popularity growing, but it's also, with that comes all these changes and all this. Like, the Guardians of the Galaxy I grew up reading is not the Guardians of the Galaxy that we see now in the comics or the ones on TV. I mean, it's a close proximity, but it's not, I mean, not right for the picking where I, or not exactly what I was kind of reading when I was reading that comic book, and when Abnett and was writing it during the Annihilation run and all that stuff. So, but yeah, I'm super stoked that it became a movie, and I can share that stuff with my daughter, and she loves the Rocket and Groot stuff. So
yeah,
I'm happy for that aspect, but I do miss the fact that it was like my own like little kind of fandom that nobody knew about.
Yeah. And if you actually met another fan, it was like a huge thing, like instant friends.
Yeah. Yeah. You're friends for life at that point, but now everybody knows what Guardians of the Galaxy is, and it's not special anymore.
I don't know. I'm the opposite. My favorite growing up was always Fantastic Four, and now it's, I gotta kind of be like, it's good in the comics. Like, don't judge the movies.
Yeah, it was good in the comic. Yeah, I mean, if you can find a comic now, it's even disappeared from there too, which is such a shame. I agree. Fantastic Four is one of my favorite things, and I hated to see it kind of disappear with Secret Wars too.
Yeah, you know, who knows? Maybe we'll get it back someday.
You know, I hear lots of rumors and talk that Marvel has it, and they're just sitting on it, and they're waiting for the right time to kind of let it loose. Because, I mean, I believe the deal with Fox is they have to have a movie in production every 5 years. So they're really approaching that kind of deadline here for Fantastic Four 2, and they recently knocked it off their schedule completely. So it's not, they don't even have a movie planned or scheduled anymore. So, I mean, either way, I think Marvel is getting those rights back in our lifetime at some point, if not already.
That's what it seems like, though. They're not going to make another. And I think you were talking about that on a recent episode of Cape's Crew. It might have been the Guardians of the Galaxy review, or I think you were mentioning the Fantastic Four rights recently on the podcast, right?
Yeah, probably during Guardians of the Galaxy, because there was a Fox had owned... Oh my God, I'm blanking on his name. Ego. They had owned Ego, and they had to make a deal with Marvel to kind of get that character, or Marvel had to make a deal with Fox to get that character. And luckily, Fox needed their permission to do like the Legion shows and the Gifted shows and that the X-Men stuff. Their right stuff is very, very wonky. So they basically are like, hey, you will go ahead and do your X-Men shows, just give us his characters. But I like I said, I do imagine there's other stuff thrown in that. And then we also found out, too, that the Watchers were kind of a shared thing. So, like, I guess that Fox and Marvel owns that stuff. So that either one of them can use it, but only Fox can refer to Yatu, or the specific Watcher that's for the 616 universe. Mm-hmm. So it gets all very muddled. But like I said, I part of me thinks that Fox knows the writing's on the wall for the Fantastic Four. They have all these X-Men movies planned. They have their kind of... doing this giant like launch of this X-Men universe. My thought is they just bury Fantastic Four and they just move forward with X-Men and they just let Marvel have Fantastic Four back, or they make some deal with the TV in perpetuity where they say, hey, here's Fantastic Four back, let us do TV stuff forever without having to ask permission or for you for changes. Because every time Fox does a TV show that's Marvel related, they still have to go to Marvel and ask permission, whether it's for characters, for storylines, all that stuff. So I'm sure they would be love to break free of that kind of that chain.
Yeah, and I mean, the fact that they're making deals at all kind of bodes well for the future of... There'll be future deals between the two of them.
Yeah, I like I said, I don't expect X-Men to ever cross over with the Avengers, because Fox is just never giving that up. That's their bread and butter. And I think what a lot of people don't look at is, like, you have to look at what other franchises these companies have. Like, Fox doesn't have a lot of stuff to rest their kind of their laurels on. Like, they don't have a Harry Potter or I don't know what Sony have, or a Fast and the Furious. You know what I mean? So they need the X-Men more than maybe Sony may need Spider-Man or something like that. So I think they have a lot to lose by giving up making a deal with Marvel, while they have even more to lose if they don't just get rid of the Fantastic Four and cut it loose.
Yeah, so we'll see what the future holds with that. And That's kind of why I love the Cave Screw podcast, because you just dive into all that kind of stuff. But you were saying originally it was Geeks with Wives and Capes?
Yeah, so...
How did that morph into Capes Crew?
We just dropped the Geeks with Wives. Funny story. So we get this whole thing going, and once I was given control of the comic section and just given carte blanche and say, just go nuts, I went nuts. So I contacted every PR company and all that stuff, and we were all ready to go. Geeks with Wives headed to our first, I believe it was convention. I want to say it was WonderCon or maybe Stanley Kamikaze. Have all these interviews set up with these comic creators I've been dying to talk to, one of them being Kelly Sue DeConnick. And every single one of them, her especially, brought up the name Geeks with Wives and kind of like jabbed at it a little bit, like how it kind of was like maybe a little sexist and a little and a little like boys clubby. So I couldn't shake that. I was like, hey, you know what, they're right. Like if I want to do this right and I want to recruit like every race and every ethnicity and every sexuality and not discriminate from anybody, I can't say Geeks with Wives because that gives this connotation that like only male dudes are allowed that are married. And that was always a question too when I would recruit writers, like, oh, do I have to be married? And it's like, no, not at all, it's just a name. So then it was just like, okay, everyone is familiar with GWW. Like I think that's a good staple, kind of like IGN, like Imagination. Nobody knows what they're called, the Imagination Games Network. They all just know IGN, yeah. Right? So my idea was like, okay, let's just transition from Geeks with Wives to Geeks Worldwide, because that's actually more, as dumb of a name as it is, it's more kind of conducive to what we are, because we are literally worldwide. We have writers in every and most major continents, I guess. We have gay writers, transsexual writers, we have writers of every ethnicity and background. So I mean, it just meant, I think Geeks Worldwide just kind of fit more. And then once we made that change, I just dropped it from the Capes Crew podcast, because there was no point. And then also with the network too, I didn't want to distinguish my podcast as different from any of the other podcasts, because mm-hmm. none of them are called, it's not called GWW Parley Pod or GWW Comic Noobs. So I just wanted to, like, all right, we're starting a network, we're all on the same level. I'm just, my podcast is just here with the rest of you guys. I'm not, if Geeks Worldwide were to go away tomorrow, I could still take the podcast and go do something else with it. So
right,
so that was kind of the thought behind that. And
yeah, and I think the name's awesome. I think Geeks Worldwide rolls off the tongue a little bit better, and it keeps the GWW. So
I think of Step Brothers every time I say it.
Prestige.
Yeah, so I always, and I know it's so dumb and so like, but yeah, I can't shake that, and I do hope everyone that's listening, just GWW. That's all I want you guys to get away with. I mean, we're at thegww.com. Our Twitter's at the_GWW, so Geeks Worldwide is just kind of a placeholder for GWW. But yeah, I do agree, it does fit us very well, because like I said, I want to be inclusive to everyone, and that's kind of my goal with this whole thing, is to give everybody a chance.
Yeah, and it's awesome how inclusive you are. And so for changing to, you know, away from Geeks with Wives, any challenges or any tips that went along with like rebranding the company, essentially?
Make sure you're happy with your final decision. Make sure you have everything like ready to go, like logo wise and that stuff. I mean, I think we decided to make the change so quickly that maybe I'm not super happy with our logo. And I do kind of always kind of bug people like, oh, we should like really tweak this a little bit and that kind of stuff. So yeah, but I mean, I would just say go for it. No one, and that's the beauty of the internet. And I think you can get away with changing your name fairly easily, and people are still going to find you. Mm-hmm. Like especially on, like Twitter or stuff. I just changed a Twitter name, and it was like we didn't lose any followers. And everyone recognized that who we are. We made an announcement of the change, and it was kind of just moved on from there. I mean, once in a while, you'll get someone saying, "Oh, weren't you guys this?" Yeah, we were, but now we're this. And, you know, and it's not a huge deal. Nobody cares.
Yeah. Yeah, I hate naming things, so every time I do, it's always like, oh, you know, if I have to down the line, I'll change it. Like,
Yeah, I agree. And renaming the website was a really pain in the ass, because number one, we were trying to find stuff that fit within like GWW. So what combination of words can you get that still hold, like still is that recognizable GWW kind of brand? So I think one time it was like Worldly Wizards. I don't, there was a bunch of weird stuff that we like kind of like threw out there, and finally we just kind of landed on Geeks Worldwide. I was like, hey, that works. It seems to work. Everybody's happy with it. All right, we're moving on.
Yeah, I know. It's one of those things that it takes, like, you hear so many names, when you get one that's good, it's like, all right, yep, that's fine. Let's take it and go.
But you know, the name just doesn't matter at all. Because you look at, and I came to this conclusion after kind of being in this business for a while and following sites like Colander and Heroic Hollywood and Bleeding Cool, and just like the name doesn't matter, because those names are dumb. Like, what's Colander mean? I have no idea. What's The Verge mean? Like, they're just adjectives, you know what I mean? So I don't think that the name is, we could have called ourselves, I mean, the House of Shit, and I don't think it would have maybe been a little bit aggressive, but I don't think it, as long as the content and the people and the idea I think was there, I think the name is really just kind of on the back burner.
Yeah, because for the most part, the content's what people will see first.
Yeah, that's the hope. That's really the hope. That's always kind of what I strive for.
And that's something you guys do really well. So, I mean, you really are worldwide. You have a community of contributors. So when you changed the name, was that when you decided to move to a kind of a network of shows and content creators, or was that before or after? How did that work?
That was kind of always the idea, I guess. When they made me editor-in-chief out of pure necessity, it was just like, hey, you're here year-round and you know the game a little bit. That was just kind of my goal, because we, like I said, we don't have advertisements. We don't get, like, we don't have a million hits a month. You know what I mean? We don't have these giant numbers that kind of would allow us to pay people a salary. So all I could offer was like, hey, I'm pretty good at this. The people around me are pretty good at this. We have all the tools. We'll pay for everything. But I just need people. I just need content creators. And I also kind of saw the trend in these internet sites that no one's getting paid. Like, that's the other thing too. Like, I do freelance stuff for others, for magazines and other sites, and you would reach out there and it's like, hey, you happily come and read this review. Here's a movie ticket, but I can't pay you. Mm-hmm. So like after that, I was like, well, if you're not paying me and he's not paying me and I can just do this myself, like, what do I need you guys for? And then at the same time, it was the bigger sites of comicbook.com or CBR, these guys saying, well, you need a resume. You need a 10-year resume before you can even think about applying to places like this. You need we need to see like 100 posts or 100 reviews. And so at that point, it just became like, well, I'm just going to do this until someone pays me to do it. You know what I mean? I'm just going to keep doing this and doing this. And that was kind of my idea for everyone. And that's where it kind of grew from. It was just like, listen, I will give you the platform. I'll give you the tools. I'll give you the technology. I'll give you the podcast space. I'll give you the picture space. I'll give you everything. Just give me your content. Just give me your creativity, and I will promote it to the best of my knowledge and make sure as many people as I possibly can see it. And that's really all there is. And then hopefully, God willing, Newsarama or CBR or The Verge or Colander sees your article and says, hey, come work for us full time. And that's the goal. And that's happened. We've had people go off and get paid jobs, myself included, from the work that they did on the site. So that's the goal. I kind of attribute us to a AAA baseball team. And in fact, I tried to, I don't know if I'm supposed to say this, but there was a major, major company that was looking to kind of buy us out. Mm-hmm. And that's how I sold it to them. And it was like, listen, you're not just buying a website. You're buying a baseball team. You're buying a staff for the next 10 years. You're buying training, you're buying all this stuff that you don't have to do, because I'll do it for you, and then I'll just say, hey, all right, this guy's ready for the big time, and you just take him and you can go do whatever you guys want to do with him and throw him out there in the major leagues. But I'll spend the time cultivating these people and finding them and getting them ready, and because I don't think a lot of people, it's easy to write, but it's not easy to navigate the PR and the kiss assness that this industry mm-hmm. requires. Like, that stuff hard. It's hard. It's hard to be a nice guy 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's hard to beg for things. You know what I mean? But you have to, like, it's just part of being in this business. If you want to get reviews, copies, if you want to get free stuff and you want to be able to be known enough to where you can get exclusives on your site or get interviews and that things, you have to like put yourself out there, and you have to say, you have to just create the content and hope someone notices it, and then beg for things and say, hey, we made all this. Here's our review. Here's our stuff. Can you give us a review copy for the next stuff? So that's kind of how it all kind of goes. And like I said, that's where the industry is flowing. I just don't imagine there's going to be a lot of IGNs anymore.
Yeah, it's definitely not something that's growing. And that's kind of what turns a lot of people off who just want to write or just want to like talk and create a podcast is all that like additional work other than just doing what they want, like what they like to do, is all that the technical stuff, the kissing ass, the sponsors, and you know, that's kind of where you come in.
Yeah, like I said, I don't like it either, but I understand navigating that stuff is difficult and painstaking. But the number one thing is, I think if you have a passion for it, it'll always shine through. And so those people will always kind of shine through, I think. And so that's why I think there's these podcasts that are going 500 episodes strong or have a million listeners, because they're passionate and they love doing what they want to do. And once you love doing it, then it's not work anymore. It just is.
Yeah, and that's awesome. I mean, I know Cape Screw's almost at 200, and like some of the other ones are just cranking away. Is that just you kind of getting out of those people's way, or how are you involved in them creating stuff?
I don't get in anybody's way. The only time I ever get in anyone's way is if it becomes like a racially charged, like it's like a, I need to get in their way. It's like a political or racial issue, or mm-hmm. or it's a infighting amongst writers and artists, because we all do kind of chat with each other all day long. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I literally, in fact, that's my kind of my selling point. I'm never going to get you in your way, and you can write about and talk about whatever you want, whether it's anime or board games or woodworking. I really don't care. what I want to do is I want you to learn how to write. I want you to learn how to sell yourself, and I want you to learn how to have fun telling your story. That's what I tell everybody and everyone. Whenever we get a new writer, it's always like, oh, how do you recommend I write this? I would recommend reading other people's stuff and then finding your own voice and just writing it as much as you can. And the one thing I always have to tell people to do is have fun describing your critique. Like, use adjectives. That's always quotable. That's what's going to get you put on a comic book cover or in a press release. And it's going to have your name there and in your quote, as if it's something that's engaging and fun. And so I always tell people, just have fun with what you're writing about, and the passion and stuff will shine through. And don't worry about the grammar and spelling and that stuff. There's programs and crap that'll fix all that stuff for you now. And all you have to do is be good at displaying your passion. Cause I think that's what everybody gravitates towards now, because everyone's producing free content. Anyone can produce podcasts or create a website. It's super easy. So to make yourself stand above the cream of the crop is just to have more passion than the person next to you.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And yeah, that's I'm super excited to get my woodworking podcast up on your network.
Please. Awesome. I mean, like, yeah, I don't discriminate in any way when it comes to creating content, and unless we already have something. Like, we do get a lot of people who are like, oh, I want to do a Wonder Woman review. Well, I can't run five Wonder Woman reviews. I can run one, yeah, because that would just muddle our integrity. But when it comes to like editorial and lists, I always say, just go nuts, go crazy. I love it. Go do, be controversial, make speak your mind. And we have a guy from England. His name's R.W. Adams. He writes the craziest, most out of this world, like, FU fandom stuff, and I love it every time, and it always kind of sparks a conversation. So that's kind of what I'm always looking for.
Yeah, I think on your Patreon video, one of your contributors said, you know, you guys disagree with each other and you write things that contradict each other, and that's okay, because you're just like a bunch of different passionate people having a discussion.
Yeah, I think that's super important. My goal is to make our writers the star, not the website. And it may be contradictory to the goal of like getting advertising and all that stuff, but like, we're all just fans, and we all just are looking for a place to kind of shout our fandom and speak our mind. And that's what I want the GWW to be, is kind of a place for fans to come together and have conversations. And yeah, it can get a little out of hand and heavy. And we have had our disagreements and have had to ask people to leave or get rid of people. But that's what comes with any, I mean, when you get 50 nerds in a room, there's going to be infighting. It's just how it is.
Is that how big the team is now?
I probably have a good 35 contributors, including podcast hosts.
Wow.
And yeah, probably about 50 people total that will contribute to the site every couple of months. And there's, like I said, there's people that contribute every day. There's people that contribute once a month or once a week. And there's people that contribute once every 3 months. And that's all perfectly fine, as long as we're all in contact and I know like what the situation is and that you're not running off with my press materials, then yeah. I usually am pretty relaxed about who people are posting, as long as content's coming up all the time. But we've never, I mean, in the past 5 years, I think we've been really good about making sure that we always have some content going up every day.
Yeah. And how do you keep that many people and that amount of content organized and kind of coordinated?
Poorly. no, I think it has to do with a lot of the things that I touch every article. Outside of the game stuff, which I let Joe and Jeff kind of handle, I don't really, I touch all the comic stuff, all the entertainment, all the podcasts, all those go through my eyes first. So, I'm pretty good about calling stuff out or if it's already been written about or whatever before people get going on it. We've had a couple instances where people wrote double reviews or something, and it kind of comes with like who requested it first. Because I use Discord. I don't know if you're familiar with Discord. It's basically like a AIM chat. Mm-hmm. But we're in that all day long talking to each other. Every section has kind of its own like group. And so I'm in every group kind of chatting with people, seeing what they're writing next, setting up interviews, setting up the reviews for the week. That's the biggest pain in my ass is the comic book reviews. Because that stuff is every week, and we get hundreds of review copies a week. And it's like kind of sorting those out, divvying those out, making sure we have enough stuff covered to make all the companies happy. That's my biggest challenge every week.
Yeah. Yeah, I can imagine that gets pretty rough. Do you use any other tools other than Discord to kind of keep everything on track?
I use Google Hangouts. I've created like our a press library in there. So that way I just kind of store all of our comics and all of our like press materials, and that way if someone wants to write like say they want to write something on The Walking Dead, they can go back and research past Walking Dead issues and all that kind of stuff.
Nice.
So I try to keep as much of it as I can, but again, yeah, that becomes costly because you're talking about terabytes of comic books at this point. It's limited, but I try to keep as much as I can. But yeah, I'm bad at organization, really bad at it. So I do the best that I can, but stuff certainly does fall through the cracks. And if anyone's out there and is listening and wants to like be an editor or wants to come us and help us out like administrative wise, I'm always looking for help. In every aspect, like I said, if you're looking for a job or you're looking to intern someplace or you're looking to kind of get your feet wet in a job, but don't think you're qualified enough or don't have the experience enough, like come to us. I will put you to work like on Twitter, on Facebook. I'll give you a social media experience. I'll give you video editing experience. I'll give you graphic design experience. Like I have work for all that kind of stuff. So, and that's what we do too. We're not just writers. Everyone kind of contributes in a different way on top of writing, whether it's editing videos, doing logos, maintaining the website, or editing a section or helping me edit posts. So it's a lot of work for free, man.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is kind of a good opportunity because one of the goals of this podcast is to kind of inspire other entrepreneurs, I say. Any call outs as far as kind of what you're looking for and, you know, some of those to try to get some of those writers or podcasters interested in GWW?
Yeah, I mean, what I'm looking for is passionate people who want to speak their mind and who want to work in this industry permanently. I think that's a big caveat. I think you have to have a strong passion because it's very grindy. Like if you ever play like Japanese role playing games, like you're grinding hard in this stuff. You're doing work that you don't want to do. You're writing reviews for things that you hate. You're having to do things that necessarily don't always pique your interest, but you're having to do it because it's part of the job, and you're doing it for free. And that's why another thing I want to get across, like, don't ever be afraid to work for free. In fact, I always say just do it for free until someone pays you, because if you do it for free long enough, you're gonna get noticed. Like I said, we've been doing this for eight or nine years, maybe less, and we've had multiple writers go off and work for the big companies like your Newsaramas and your IGNs and your comicbook.coms and all that stuff. So, but they all did it for free first. So I always say that, just be willing to work for free. Have a strong passion for what you want to do. Have a strong passion for what you want to say, and don't be afraid to speak your mind.
Yeah. And I think the other big part of it is just start writing. So, I mean, you are really, you know, like you said, the triple A's, you gotta develop your talent, and it seems like a good place to do it.
Yeah. Start taking grounders, take some BP, you know? Yeah. Just start doing it. And like I said, what the GWW is a platform for you to share your creativity and your fandom with the world. So you come to me, you write it, you create it, and I will cultivate it, and I will guide you, and I will give you everything that you need to make it awesome, and then we together will share it with as many people and get as many eyeballs on it as we possibly can.
Awesome. And yeah, that's the other big part is you've kind of grown this awesome network. Any particular channel or any like tactic that you've done that's helped you grow the most?
I think social media has really kind of helped us absolutely the most. It's been a lot of just kind of getting in social media, following people of like minds, saying the right things, I guess, getting the right tweets out there. And then, yeah, tagging people and saying, hey, you might like this. And then having them say, oh, yeah, I do like that. And then having them kind of stick around. And that's kind of that's all it's really been. It's just been grindy. It's just kind of like you were saying, just finding that audience. And because no one, I'm going to be honest, like no one's come, as far as I know, maybe you can tell me otherwise, I just don't hear it that often, but I don't feel like a lot of people find GWW. Like I go out and find people and I say, check this out, you might like it. And they're like, oh, wait, yeah, I do like this. And then they end up just sticking around and having conversations with us. And I think that's what has helped us grow the most, so just reaching out there and just saying, hey, we exist and we're here for you guys, and we're not some like big site that's going to ignore your opinions or it's going to ignore your thoughts or what you have to say. And we're not going to try to shove our clickbaity articles down your throat. And we're going to try to give everyone hear a voice and allow everyone to kind of speak their mind and then go from there. And just hope and pray that people gravitate to you and pay attention and stick around.
Yeah, I know I found you guys on Twitter a while ago. I don't know whether it was a you know, recommended follow or something someone shared, but yeah, there's a lot of it. Definitely, you know, other people sharing your content, and a lot of that is what it takes.
Yeah, like I said, if it weren't for Twitter and me really just coming to the realization that like I have to spend the majority of my time promoting and using this new technology to make this thing grow, then yeah, I don't think we'd still be around today. Because I mean, when I started, I think they had maybe 2,000 Twitter followers, and now we're up to 28,000. So it's quite a big leap. And like I said, a lot of that was me physically going out and finding people, following them, saying, "Check this out, follow us, please read this, please come work with us, please get our name out there, DC, please God, help us." So it's a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, and I'm assuming by physically following them you mean like on social media, but you have gone to some conventions and kind of built the brand that way, right?
Yeah, I go to a lot of conventions, or I try to go a lot of the conventions. Luckily for me, I live in California, which is like convention capital of the world. So there's one every single week. And if I really wanted to, I could stick to it. And But yeah, I will go to conventions. I will hand out cards. I will take cosplay pictures because I find that's kind of the best way to interact with that crowd outside of interviewing people. But if you take a cosplayer's picture and then hand them a card and say, come find my website and find the picture and I'll give you a copy of it, they're super responsive to that. So I found doing that. And then, yeah, then we got this huge cosplay following through that way. And then, yeah, it was through that. We got kind of some help from Cosplay Culture Magazine. And I started writing for them, and that got me in the door for doing interviews and that kind of stuff. And with the cosplay community. And so, yeah, so conventions were a huge part of my life. I'm going to be cutting them back very much so, though, because they are so much work and so much time and so much effort for very, very little enjoyment for myself personally. But yeah, conventions are always a good way to kind of get yourself out there, get those business cards out there, talk to people, shake hands. I mean, I see people now. I can go to conventions and I am friends with comic book creators, and that's just something I never thought would happen. I never thought someone like Frank Barbieri or Mark Waid or the Archie guys would ever remember or know my name, but now I see them every convention I go to, and we always have a conversation. It's never about comics. It's always about the family or what's happening. So that's a cool aspect for me now. But I mean, conventions are definitely kind of where it's at in the terms of geek culture now.
Yeah, when you go there just to meet these people or see them, and then you end up kind of every year you come back and you recognize people and actually grow friendships out of it. It's a pretty cool part of the conventions.
Yeah, that's the best part for me, because like I said, I'm very jaded at this point after doing this for going on, it feels like 8 years, and then going, yeah, to every Comic-Con and Kamikaze and WonderCon. And so I think I'm hanging up my convention hat after WonderCon this year. I'm also having a baby, so
congratulations.
Kids, thank you. Kids always get in the way of things, but
yeah.
But yeah, conventions, they're good in that aspect, and they're good in a lot of ways, and they're terrible in a lot of ways. But it's nice to see that it's always nice to see fans and creators coming together and getting to interact, and those are always kind of my favorite part. Like my most memorable thing about a convention was going to San Diego Comic Cons and sitting in the DC booth and just standing there and having Greg Capullo and Scott Snyder walk up to me and pat me on the back and say, hey, how's it going? Like these guys I've talked to over the phone or talked to Skype or met at one time at a convention, and them coming up to me and saying, and us having a huge conversation and while I'm sitting around waiting to interview somebody else. Yeah. So it's moments like that that I really take away from conventions now. But I always encourage you, if you are starting a website or looking to get your name out there, just go to conventions, hang out in those comic book areas, talk to the PR people. They're always the people running the booths. Like if you go to Image booth or the Boom booth or the Universal, always the booth people running those things are always the PR people. So just hand them your card, say, hey, I'd be loved to be getting on a press list. And they're usually pretty open to that stuff. If you're willing to talk to them.
Awesome. That's great advice. And yeah, so for this year's San Diego Comic Con, is GWW gonna have a presence, even if maybe you've hung up your cape?
Yeah, so we'll definitely be there. Will, who Darth Sparrow, who's our resident kind of cosplay guy, and he hosts the podcast with me, Cape Screw. He'll be down there, probably doing cosplay stuff and getting interviews. And then I was gonna call him Chili HB. Chris Peary, who does all of our like horror coverage and our Music Mondays. Our Metal Mondays, which is extremely popular. He'll be down there and he'll be doing all of like our, he usually does like our WB and like our animation interviews and like our TV interviews and stuff. So I think, I can't say that yet. There is a movie premiering down there this year that's coming out that we should be getting interviews from the cast for that we typically do. And yeah, usually the major TV shows we can usually get interviews for down there and stuff. So that's what San Diego Comic-Con and stuff is for us. It's literally me scheduling, like creating spreadsheets and scheduling like meetings and figuring out, okay, how can I run from the Hilton to the Anaheim Convention Center in 15 minutes? Maybe. So it's a lot of that. So yeah, I those guys will be down there and they'll be running all over and doing as much crazy stuff as I can convince them to do.
Mm-hmm. I I make spreadsheets just for myself to coordinate my own trip over there. So,
I mean, last year I took the wife with me because she'd never been. So I was like, oh, we're just going to take it easy. And I was doing work for the magazine more so than GWW. So all I had to do was take pictures and then go to like the cosplay ball or whatever. So last year it was just navigating the crowd and the heat, because I think it was like 90 degrees or something last year. So I was able to kind of put the scheduling aside, and I shove all that stuff on Will and Chris. But yeah, so this year those guys will be doing it, and like I said, we hope to come back with some awesome interviews. WonderCon was really good for us. We got to interview the whole cast of Archie. Or, I'm sorry, Riverdale. Those guys were awesome. We got to interview the whole cast of Teen Titans Judas Contract, and those kids were awesome. So in Gotham, we were invited to, just didn't make it, but should have gone. I'm hoping a lot of San Diego the same. But San Diego, like I said, I recommend, if you get a chance, go for sure. But if you don't ever get a chance, don't worry about it. Like it's such a madhouse now. I really don't enjoy it as much as I enjoy the smaller stuff.
Yeah, especially when you're trying to work it.
Yeah, working it is a nightmare. Like my first year there, I think I had, because I was super pumped. I was by myself. I didn't have a wife with me. So I had like literally booked stuff from like 10 in the morning till like 10 at night. All 3 days. And I had to take a train. I don't know if you're familiar with San Diego area, but I had to take a train from downtown to El Cajon every night too. So, so 45 minutes or an hour train ride every morning, every night, and then being there, all day, literally running from, because a lot of people don't know this, like, the interview, when you go interview someone, it's usually not inside the convention center. Usually you have to run to, like, a secret hotel room somewhere, or, like, a secret meeting room somewhere in a hotel room. So, a lot of times you can be running from, like, one Hilton, the Hilton that's on one side of the thing, to the Ramada on the other side of the convention. You have 10 minutes to get there. So, I think after the first couple of years of doing that, I was like, I'm not doing this anymore. But I think Comic-Con and E3 especially, I think you could really just cover those from home and be perfectly fine.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember last year we were at the Kevin Smith Hall H panel, and he was like 20 minutes late to his own show, like across town.
Oh, to the Babylon.
Yeah, they kept like, he was talking away, and his handler or whoever kept being like, hey, you know, like your show's on in 5 minutes. He's like, oh yeah, we should get going anyway. So even the celebrities got to be just running ragged.
Yeah, it's crazy. And what's fun about that San Diego Comic-Con now too is there's so much stuff to do outside of the convention area. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't even need a badge. I think we had more fun outside last year than we did inside. And that's because, like I said, we're press, and I'm jaded, so I can flash a badge and usually cut lines and go places that get free stuff that a lot of people don't. So I am not the right person to talk to about this stuff. But if you want to do that, come write for us, and we'll make it happen. But it's definitely an experience. But I do recommend, like, go to the smaller conventions. You'll have way more fun. You'll get to interact with way more people, and I think you'll walk away way happier.
Yeah, I love San Diego, and I can't see myself missing one, but I've definitely in the past year or two tried to go to some of the smaller ones, and it's been a blast.
Yeah, San Diego is an experience unlike any other, but like I said, for me personally, I just can't handle being around 100,000 people.
Yeah.
Like it just drives me crazy.
Yeah, crowds.
It's lines. It's really the lines that, like, I feel so bad because Chris, who, like I said, goes with us every year, and he's a big toy collector. So he'll get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and be in a Mattel line to get a ticket to go in another line to hopefully get a toy that you pray to God they didn't sell out of, that is still going to be cost you $250 out the door. So it's stuff like that that really kind of chaps my head about San Diego Comic-Con, but luckily I just avoid all that stuff and just talk to cosplayers and interview famous people. So
yeah, I woke up at I was pretty much up at 4 every day to get in some kind of line, but none of them were like, they were like, I'd go to the Game of Thrones or Hall H or something. Going to the lines that like you then have to pay to buy something was kind of is a little bit crazy to me, but you know, some people love it, and all the power to them.
Yeah, those you Hall H guys are a breed unto yourself.
Yeah,
that's insanity.
Yeah, I took it a little far last year, so I might have to dial back how long I wait in line this year. But we'll
see. How long did you wait in line?
So I got in line Thursday night at 2 a.m., like right after the bars, for the Saturday panel.
So you had to stand. Do they give you? See, I don't understand how this works, because as a person who just cannot stand in a line for more than an hour, like when we go to Disneyland, like I'm like fast pass king, and I'm like if we're standing in a line for more than an hour and a half, we're not going on it. It's not happening. So how does that work? Do you stand in line? Do they give you a ticket to come back on Saturday, or are you there until Saturday?
Yeah, they'll give you on Friday night at like midnight. They'll start handing out bracelets, so if you want, you can then leave and come back the next Saturday morning in like 6 hours. But yeah, pretty much.
But you're there all day Thursday, all day Friday.
Well, like 2 a.m. Friday morning, so it was we were in line
all day
for
Thursday
28 hours or something like that. But it was.
But what, like, if you're by yourself,
people doing kind of shifts?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. If you're by yourself, like, you're screwed. You don't have, like, you can't go to the bathroom. Like, you can't eat. Like, what do you do?
I gotta say, it turned out to be a pretty great day. We had a good spot right over by the like the FX like little carnival there, and we were taking shifts. So I went and saw the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. panel. We did the Game of Thrones experience. So it was still a full Comic-Con day for me. We just took shifts.
That's so cool. And no one got mad because you guys were like cutting in and out of line, or everybody just kind of does that.
I mean, there's some people that'll hold spots for. I think the limit is, I forget what, there's definitely a spot holding limit, and some people will hold spots for like 20 people, and then if they're found out, they'll get booted. But there was three of us, so it was one person holding spots for two other people, so that's within the, nobody minds that.
That's so crazy.
But yeah, so we'll see how it goes this year.
Yeah, I am interested to see, because, I mean, it's less than a month away, right? And I haven't heard anything about panels or any of that stuff. And usually we start getting that kind of stuff now. So I'm kind of interested to see what's going to be there, if Marvel will be there, if Warner Brothers will be there, and what they're going to have to show.
Yeah, Marvel's confirmed they'll be there. But yeah, the fact that they don't bring out the official schedule until like 2 weeks before just adds to the mayhem.
Well, Marvel TV, but will Marvel Studios be there? Because they're going to have D23 like any day now. Like it's like coming up real quick right here, right?
Yeah, they actually D23 is the week before Comic-Con.
There you go.
But they confirmed like a month or two ago that they're going to be at both. So
that's we'll weird. We'll I wonder if they'll happens. Just do the same thing.
Yeah, I wrote them off when I knew D23 was this year. But
yeah, because I imagine they're not going to show anything. Like I imagine whatever huge announcement they'll make at D23, and then the Marvel stuff will just be they'll just bring all those people back out for a panel, and then they'll show the same footage they showed there, because I don't imagine they're gonna have these two giant back-to-back announcements back. That's just bad PR for them.
Yeah, I mean, they could split things up, but yeah, I'm sure D23 will get the bulk of it. So yeah, anyway, this has been awesome. I don't want to keep you for too much longer. Do you have one piece of advice for someone just starting out building a geek brand?
Don't. I mean, I honestly don't. I would find somebody, because like I said, there's so many sites that will bring on writers for free and let you and kind of do what we're doing. I'm not saying they'll be as free and open as we are, or they'll be as welcoming or as nice as we are. But I think there's so many sites out there that are looking for content creators and that will guide you and give you the tools and stuff to do it that are pretty good. I mean, like I said, a lot of them are terrible, but I mean, if you search hard enough, you're going to kind of find your own on your own. And the reason I say don't do on your own is because the market is so saturated and they're so, oh my God, sorry. You can hear my dog crying in the background. The market is so saturated and there's so many people trying to do this on their own that I think it's really counterintuitive. It would be much more conducive to you and your brand and your abilities and your and getting yourself out there to kind of latch yourself onto a site that's already a little bit established and already kind of is going a little bit. Because like I said, so many sites out there are looking for content creators. It's really easy to find a site. It's just really easy. It's maybe more difficult to find the right one for you. Mm-hmm. But doing it on yourself, I can't recommend it, mainly because you're going to have such a difficult time finding an audience. Just create a YouTube channel or stream video games. Do that stuff. Go do that stuff on your own. Those seem to be more successful, like, individually run endeavors. But trying to, like, become a, like, individual blogger is just so, so hard now. It's just so hard. So I would just say do it on your own and then try to find a site that'll repost your stuff for you. And then hopefully someday someone of importance sees it and offers you to pay you for it.
Yeah, especially if you just want to write, that seems like a great route to take.
Yeah, like I said, if you're gonna do it, like if you want to be a game streamer or if you want to be a YouTube personality, yeah, absolutely, you have to do that stuff on your own. You can't. It's. I would say that's the opposite. It's very hard to kind of go into a site like ours and make a name for yourself on the YouTube circuit. It's just that it doesn't, I don't know, it's weird like that. But if you want to be a writer, then I would say, yeah, trying to take the individual route and starting like a Casey Walsh blog is just, you're going to have such a difficult time. It'd be much easier for you just to do the blog and then find someone else that will repost your reviews or repost your stuff and then have them promote it from their site, and hopefully that you had the byline. That's all that matters. All that matters is the byline. It doesn't matter where it's at or what site it's on or it really, none of that really matters, because all anyone ever asks for is that byline. It's all they ever ask for. It's all anyone cares about. So as long as you're having those bylines and you're creating engaging, interesting content, like you if you build it, they will come. As cliche as that sounds, it's so true.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, I mean, GWW, it seems like a great spot to do it. Where do you guys see yourself growing in the future, as far as, you know, the next year, 5 years, whatever?
I mean, honestly, I have no idea. The idea is just always to just grow and just get more readers and to get advertisers or to get someone to buy us out and make it a viable, make it a viable business. But if that never happened, I'd be perfectly fine. Like I said, I save so much money just on like purchasing comic books and movies, because I get them sent to us for free. And as kind of bad as that sounds, it's the truth, that I am happy just getting that kind of stuff. And I don't really ever need to get paid, but I do feel bad that I can't pay like the people that write for our site. Like, I do wish I could monetize them in some way. So that I could let them know outside of giving them access to comic books and TV shows and that kind of thing, that I could give them some kind of monetary compensation. So that's the ultimate goal. But at the end of the day, I really just want all of our staff to either get paid by me or somebody else doing what they love.
Yeah, that's a good goal. And I definitely have a few friends who just kind of get into it for a little bit of free stuff and maybe some insider info. So that's not the worst goal either.
I'm hearing that so much more nowadays. And like I said, I just think that's the way it's going. Like, it's so easy and cost-free to create a website and create content that, like, anyone can do it. And if you're good at it, people will find you. But I just don't think that the IGNs and the game, I'm gonna say GameStop, but that's not the name of the site, Game Pros and those kinds of things, just like, they're just not, it's gonna be fan sites. Like, everyone's gonna, the fan sites are gonna rule the world someday. So hopefully, you're a part of one of those fan sites when they break big. Like I think like MCU Exchange or the Hashtag Show or all of those are perfectly examples. Those are just fans that were in the right place at the right time. Put their goddamn hard work and dedication, scoured the internet for scoops and images and leaked stuff, and got it out there, and we're the first ones to do it, and now they get 100,000 hits a month. So I think it's that's the fan sites are going to rule the world, and mm-hmm. and the days of IGN and Hollywood Reporter and all these stuffs are just going to go away, and they're going to become like rag magazines, like which they are now. I mean, USA Today, god dang it, I'm gonna take over there. We had an exclusive preview for Batman issue number 24 out yesterday, and god dang USA Today spoils it. They spoiled the end of the issue, and they spoiled it in the headline. So it wasn't even like, it was like, oh, something big happens in Batman 24, come read it. No, it was like, Batman and Catwoman get proposed, in the next issue of Batman. And it's like, god, really? Like, this is USA Today we're talking about here. So, when those sites kind of gear that way and turn into these kind of clickbaity sites, I just think there's going to be a backlash, and I think that's when the fan sites are going to kind of come in and say, hey, we create content, but we create content from the heart and from our passion, and it's saying the same thing that these other sites are doing. We're doing the same thing these are doing, but these are from people like you, and you're not hearing it from some talking head critic who is 85 years old and is forced to write about comic books because it's what's popular now.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see where the industry heads. So
it'll be interesting to see where entertainment news heads. Because I just, like I said, while the comic book bubble is hot now, and it'll always be something hot for me, and I'll always be into superheroes, I don't think that's going to be the case for everyone forever. Like, it's going to pop. And so when that happens, what happens to Colander? What happens to Heroic Hollywood? What happens to, The Verge or Hollywood Reporter, you know what I mean? What happens to those sites? And I'm sure, like I said, Hollywood Reporter and what's the Varieties of the world, those will be fine because they'll always have movies. But these geek-centered sites, the IGNs and that stuff, like, what are they going to do? Because they're just not going to have the fan base to support the content they're producing anymore.
Yeah, so it'll always be more to niche sites.
Right. Like Comic Book Movie, like there's a site called comicbookmovie.com, and it's comic book movies. But like I said, comic book movies, they're going to go away. They're going to disappear at some point in time. So what happens to them? Like, what do they become? Western movies? You know what I mean? Like, what it ebbs and flows. And that's why my goal with Geeks Worldwide is kind of stock diversity, I guess you'd call it. Like, I'm celebrating fandom. I'm not celebrating comic books. I'm not celebrating movies. I'm not celebrating TV. Like I said, if you're a fan of woodworking or carving and that's your fandom and you can explain it to me in a cool way and you can bring an audience, like, come on over, like, share your fandom with us. So I think that's where a lot of these sites are going to go. It's going to be like, it's going to be fan sites. It's going to be very niche specific.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to go about it, because you can kind of follow specifically what you want. And even if comicbookmovie.com plummets in their hits, it'll hopefully stick around and you know, just share about maybe the one or two comic book movies that are coming out every year or every couple of years. And
yeah, like I said, it'll be interesting to see what happens when this kind of geek bubble collapses, because it's going to collapse as much as we kind of want to pretend that it's not going to. It's going to. It always does.
The comic book movie bubble will definitely pop, but hopefully bubble will kind of stick around, and there'll always be something for people to geek out about.
I think there will always be some. Yeah, I agree. Like, there'll always be TV, but I can say once that comic book movie bubble pops, I think you see a huge drop in kind of geek culture. And I think a lot of it is driven by movies, because movies are the ultimate medium. Everyone loves movies. I have never met a person in my life who didn't like a good movie. But not everyone likes comic books. Not everyone is engaged in TV the same way. But everyone will go see a movie. Every single person. So I think if that comic book movie bubble bops, I think comic books and the TV shows are serious trouble.
From the editor-in-chief of Geeks Worldwide, geeks are not long for this world.
Yeah. Pessimism, that's what I bring to the table, Tim.
Yeah, some forward thinking at least for the company, even if it's a different view.
That being said, get it while it's hot. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
get in there and get in and get your experience going. Because like I said, that's all that matters, and all an employer looking for, like, experience. That's all anyone cares about nowadays. And I hire people for a living. And I rarely look at a college degree All a college degree tells me is that you can complete a task on time. Mm-hmm. It's the experience and it's the knowledge that you've gained from that experience that will show me if you're going to work out or not.
Yeah, and just finding anywhere to get that experience. I mean, even if it's just, you know, writing anywhere, even if you're just not posting it, is getting some kind of practice, but getting it actually out there and getting those bylines, that's the experience.
Yeah, as crazy as that Shia LaBeouf like just do it video is, it's 100% on the mark. Like, just do it. Like, just find the time, just do it. And if you can't make yourself do it, then you're not into it that much.
Yeah, absolutely. So Casey, this was awesome. Any final pieces of advice for everyone out there?
No, I mean, just have fun. Don't be mean to each other. Geek love across the world. Let's squash this Marvel versus DC thing. I find it utterly ridiculous. What's good for the roost is good for the... Wait, that's not right, right? There's a saying that goes something like that. What's good for the hen is good for the roost. So,
yeah.
As long as we're all together and we're all kind of a community together, I think that geekdom can last for a while and can stay strong. But the more we divide ourselves and the more we kind of separate ourselves in these different types of fandoms and kind of try to negate someone else's fandom, that's where we're going to find ourselves in trouble. So if anything, just come together as a community, find someone else that shares your fandom and share something new with somebody else, and don't be afraid to try something new.
All good notes to end on. Great. So where can people learn more about GWW and reach out?
You can learn more about GWW on thegww.com. You can also find us on Twitter at @the_GWW. Since you're listening to this podcast, you probably want to reach me directly if you're interested in working for the website or contributing, and you can contact me directly at casey@thegww.com via email, or you can message me on Twitter at @thecomicskid. That's comics with an X, comix, comics kid. And yeah, that's pretty much it. So check us out, and if you like what you see, then come join our team.
Awesome. Yeah, Casey, this was so great. Thanks for joining us.
Happy to. Yeah, anytime you're looking for a guest or want to chat, I'm always around.
Sounds good. Wow, that was a great interview with Casey. A lot of awesome info for writers, especially, but I think really for anyone trying to grow a geek brand. And that's the tip I took away the most from, was really understanding what your goal is as far as the brand you're building. So whether you want to really create a company, you know, or a YouTube channel or a Twitch stream or something like that. Casey said, you know, becoming a contributor on a site like the GWW isn't really the best route to take. But if you are just looking to grow your reputation as a writer, it may be the way to go. So really understanding what your goals overall are and then mapping out a kind of a career plan or a business plan for yourself and your brand to see the best way to get there and how other sites and other opportunities can help you move towards the goals that you have in mind for yourself. And that kind of leads into the Under the Capes moment this week, where I talk about my own journey building my geek brand. So that's actually one of the goals for myself is... I do like writing. That's my main job. And I do kind of want to grow my reputation and put the word out there, especially about the podcast, but, you know, about the brand in general. So the past couple weeks, what I've been working on is contributing to some other sites. So last week, I was really lucky to be the attendee of the week on the San Diego Comic-Con unofficial blog. So that was just a really small way to get my name out there. And in the future, I'm going to be I'm working on a few other things that have been submitted to some other sites to hopefully get the name out there even more. And I'll share that experience with you as it develops. You can follow Casey and the Geeks Worldwide team. Casey is at The Comics Kid on Twitter, comics with an X. And you can follow the GWW at the underscore GWW on Twitter, the GWW on Facebook and Instagram, and Geeks Worldwide on YouTube. You can also follow me on Twitter at Under the Capes, on Instagram at Under the Capes Podcast, and on Facebook at Under the Capes. And if you like the show, I'd really appreciate you rating us and reviewing us on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you happen to be listening from, or send me some feedback on Twitter or the blog comments. All of the show notes for this will be on the website at underthecapes.com/episode7. And be sure to subscribe and tune in next week. I'll be talking to the Nerdy Girly, and she offers some great insight into how she has built her brand around creating tips for San Diego Comic-Con and offering a unique perspective on the kind of geek community and the con community. So that was a really cool one. I'm looking forward to sharing that with you. Until next week, I hope you guys have a great one. And as always, thanks for listening.